Our scripture today comes from John 2, verses 1 through 11. On the third day, a wedding took place in Cana in Galilee. Jesus' mother was there, and Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. When the wine was gone, Jesus' mother said to him, "They have no more wine." "Woman, why do you involve me?" Jesus replied. "My hour has not yet come." His mother said to the servants, "Do whatever he tells you." Nearby stood six stone water jars, the kind used for Jews by the Jews for ceremonial washing, each holding about from 20 to 30 gallons. Jesus said to the servants, "Fill the jars with water." And so they filled them to the brim. Then he told them, Now draw some out and take it to the master of the banquet." They did so, and the master of the banquet tasted the water that had been turned into wine. He did not realize where it had come from, though the servants who had drawn the water knew. When they called the bridegroom aside and said, "Everyone brings out the choice wine first, and then the cheaper wine after the guests have had too much to drink. But you have saved the best till now." What Jesus did here in Cana of Galilee was the first of the signs through which he revealed his glory, and his disciples believed in him.
They have no wine. They have no wine, is what Mary, the mother of Jesus, says. And apparently it must be a thing, an issue, a social embarrassment in the making, a red-faced no-no at a wedding faux pas that is about to have guests glancing sideways at each other and whispering amongst themselves. "They have no wine," Mary says to her son, and we are left to wonder what tone of voice she might have used. From here, it does seem rather terse, rather directive, a mama kind of voice. "They have no wine, do whatever he tells you." Sounds very much like a mom in charge at a wedding, no less. And have you ever heard mama's voice at a wedding? We are now decades into the aftermath of Prohibition, and some of us still carry around a strong dose of an inherited Mennonite sensibilities to total our tea. We may find this Bible talk about wine confusing, even off-putting, not appropriate upon our arrival at the moral high ground. And so what are we to make of Jesus becoming a winemaker? "They have no wine," in whatever voice Mary is using, is expressing a need. And maybe the wine is not just about the wine. It was near sundown when our trekking group arrived at our first homestay in a Palestinian village, a village with littered and dusty streets. And a dusty car escorted James and I to our house, to a family of seven with five little ones who, if the cracked bedroom door was accurate, all slept on a large homemade bed of 2x6s, all five. Mom prepared dinner for James and myself with much good food and served it with only a few English words, very few, served it with smiles while pleasant Arabic banter filled the room of their sparse apartment. It turns out that this Palestinian house was actually a multi-family dwelling. Up two flights of stairs took us to our sleeping quarters of two prepared single beds and one cold shower and one insufferable pesky mosquito and barking neighborhood dogs and 4 a.m. wake-up calls to prayers. And because Mom had to head off early the next morning in her dusty car to work, we were to have breakfast down one flight of stairs to the second floor with Auntie. I think she said Auntie, we are not sure. When James and I came down, an older gentleman was waiting for us at the door, and with his hands and his smile, he gestured us in to their table in their sparsely appointed apartment, into their very sparse apartment, to a breakfast of flatbreads and quartered tomatoes and sliced cucumbers and hummus and hard-boiled eggs and super sweet tea, and I kept looking for anything that resembled coffee. Breakfast was delightful, It really was the four of us, two of us quietly making the best of our new foods and our new words, pointing when needed. And when we had thoroughly finished, the elder man at the table said, "Coffee?" And James nodded his head yes, and I said yes with more than a little desperation in my voice, "Yes." And he smiled and stood up and gestured us to come. "Come away from the breakfast table and into the living room. Sit down," he motioned, "on the couches for the coffee, for the strong coffee." The four of us sat together, him pouring and passing the small, dainty cups, and us pointing towards the wedding photos on their wall, and it was then that I realized that coffee is not just the coffee. It is a hospitality starter. It is a people generator, served in living rooms and upon arrival in Bedouin tents, and during rest stops in the courtyards of homes along the way, and served up to me impromptu as we walked past three hardscrabble men lounging in their doorstep near a refugee compound. Coffee? But it's more than just coffee. It is meant to be offered with conversation and connection, with an invitation to get to know. And what would happen if you ran out of it? What would happen if you ran out of the wine? I think Mary knew, for the wine is not just the wine. This wedding in the town of Cana comes from the Gospel of John and is one of those scripture lessons that might actually be helped if we had ourselves a time machine. In fact, if we had 100 time machines, one for each of us, that we could climb into and set the dial for around 30 AD and go back there and be a fly on the wall at this wedding event, I think it would help to see what is actually going on behind the scenes. For that is what the scripture seems like. Seems like it's a little backstage somehow, for nothing is being said about the wedding itself. The merry action is going on off to the side, out back, seems like, in the anteroom. So Mary has pointed to the crisis. They have no wine. It's a thing, the need, an exposure to shame. And if we are reading this as well-heeled middle-classers, maybe we miss that point. A need and exposure to shame. And Jesus, I don't know, Jesus sounds like someone who does not want to be bothered. He is making excuses. If our time machines had been all been dialed in correctly, this would be a good fly-on-the-wall place. Listening to Jesus and his mama talking, Mary saying they have no wine, Jesus coming back with, "Woman, what concern of that is to you and me? What concern is that to you and me?" Nowadays, we would say things like, "Well, that's not my deal." We would say, "Not my circus, not my monkeys," or "Stay out of it." What concern is that to you and me? Jesus said that. Jesus said that to his mama. And his mama turns her face away and instructs all those back there with him, "Do whatever he tells you. Just do whatever he tells you." So there happened to be these six stone water jars back there, six big clay water jars, each one large enough to hold 20 or 30 gallons each. These are too heavy to lift jars. They are cisterns for water, water for purification. And what if it was all used up? And I'm guessing by now that Mama has left the room and has left Jesus in charge. Maybe she went back out to mix with the wedding guests. Maybe. For now, it is Jesus who is giving the instructions. Fill them. Refill the six big water jars with water. And if you do the math, that's around 150 gallons with no faucets, no spigots in sight. You have to know that Palestine is a very dry place. It was then, and it still is. It is a dry and dusty and rocky place. We were midday one day in a hike in the middle of a godforsaken nowhere when our guide, Giorgio, alerted to us that we were nearing a spring. Yeah? And if we wanted to, we could take off our shoes and socks and roll up our pant legs and wade back about 50 yards off trail through the stream around a bend to see the actual spring. Okay, if we wanted. When we did, we found there was water flowing out of a mountain crevice. It was a water source. which did seem like a bigger deal to Giorgio than it was to us. For in Palestine, water is not just water, it is precious, and you have to go get it oftentimes. Palestine is a land with 1,000 high rocky hills which act like a huge giant funnel that collects rain when it does come and funnels the rain into ground streams above ground and also into underground streams that comes out of mountain cracks. And so in places like Cana of Galilee, water is not just water, it is precious. And if you are keen to know its sources, it will come from a spring or it will come from a well. And a well is likely a long haul from the house. And so when Jesus gives his instructions to fill those big water jars with 150 gallons of water, it is likely to send the workers hiking out the door to the water source, back and forth, who knows how many times, water to well to jar, dump, well to jar, dump, well to jar, dump, however long it takes. Because in Palestine, water is not just water. It is precious and it has a source. Fill the big stone jars with it, Jesus said, fill them, and it probably took a while to get it done. In much of the Christian world, the story of Jesus at the wedding in Cana, turning water into wine, is considered a miracle. But for whatever reason, John calls it a sign. We get that in verse 11. Jesus did this, the first of his signs that reveal his glory. And I do not know why John calls what Jesus did a sign and why John didn't call it a miracle. I don't know. Some of the earliest Christians in Ireland thought the Gospel of John stood apart from the rest. They said the other three Gospels tell the story of Jesus. They do. But John, they said, tells about the heartbeat of God. And maybe they were onto something. I have asked to have the Psalm 36 reading here. I've asked to have it read using two different voices. Two different voices. For our listening, simply notice the contrast between the two. Let us listen in.
Psalm 36, 1 to 10. I have a message from God in my heart concerning the sinfulness of the wicked. There is no fear of God before their eyes. In their own eyes, they flatter themselves too much to detect or hate their sin. The words of their mouths are wicked and deceitful. They fail to act wisely or do good. Even on their beds, they plot evil. They commit themselves to a sinful course and do not reject what is wrong.
Your love, Lord, reaches to the heavens, your faithfulness to the skies. Your righteousness is like the highest mountains, your justice like the great deep. You, Lord, preserve both people and animals. How priceless is your unfailing love, O God. People take refuge in the shadow of your wings. They feast on the abundance of your house. You give them drink from your river of delights. For with you is the fountain of life. In your light, we see light. Continue your love to those who know you, your righteousness to the upright in heart.
Not too long ago, I found myself talking with a Christian businessman. To his credit, he has taken a small company and grown it. His business flourishes, it does well for himself and for his employees. But he had a question for me. And maybe it was because he found out that I was a pastor, maybe. He said, I founded my company using Christian principles from the beginning as a way to take care of my family, for sure, and for my employees to make a living, for sure. He said, I tithe my own company salary through the local church. My wife and I agreed to do that from the beginning, but my business has grown, and lately we have shown good profits. And one of our business principles is to give back to the local community, not some far away off, but to a local community, for that is where we live. It's where my employees live, and I want our local community to flourish too. But at the end of the year, there always comes this dilemma. to whom and to what organization, to what need. And I want things to remain anonymous. I want our company logo. I do not want it to appear on a ball field fence. Deciding these things is always my end-of-the-year dilemma, but how exactly? And I did not know what to say back to this man. His community is not my world. But I did say two things to him rather off the top of my pastoral head. One, I told him that the playing field of life will never be level. Never. We do not know why these things are. Advantages happen to some. Disadvantages happen to others. The playing field will never, ever be level, not in this life. So plan on having your dilemma every year at the end of the year. Every year your company turns a profit. Count on it. And number two, I told him off the top of my pastoral head to keep looking around his community. Keep his compassion eyes open for pockets of disadvantage. And I wanted to tell him two stories, one about a woman I know who has a marvelous gift and much good sense, and that lately she has come to understand that her marvelous gift is best shared and not hoarded wherever she goes. And I also told him a story about a man that I know who also has a marvelous gift, yet he seems to plow through life plunging only forward with a grim heart, seldom looking left or right or behind him to see who is next to him, to see whose need is around him. So I told the businessman, best I can tell you is to look around all the time, every year. Back in December, it was the Marionites' turn to serve a shift at the cold weather shelter. The shelter beds are usually full this time of year, usually full of regulars. It is a warm place to sleep and do laundry and eat hot food prepared and donated by local churches and local eateries. This particular evening, two new people happened by, and part of the entry process is to do the uptake work of new persons upon entry, a kind of registration. One was a guy, one was a woman who looked rather tired and hapless. A staff person took down her personal information, and the last step of the process was to take a photo of the person. And since my camera was on the desk where I was, I got to snap the pic. And she was reluctant. She said, I don't look good. My eyes are swollen from crying. I am so sad. And I said, you look quite fine to me. And she said, I do. I clicked her picture. And the whisper from the staff was that her man had been carted off to jail and that maybe she had been part of a trafficking scheme. As she left the camera pose, she cracked an ever so brief smile as she walked over to the food table to gather some food, and it was one of those times when the food was more than food. It was a table where she got some of her dignity back. Cana is the place where Jesus turned common water into good wine, and some say it was a miracle. Some of us may still get fussy about how much buzz the wine actually had. John said it was a sign. Maybe the best thing we can take away from this Cana wedding story is that the wine is more than just wine. Jesus' glory is being revealed, but also the needs and the dignity of Mary's neighbors lay in the balance, and Jesus stepped in, and it was a sign of even more things to come.